So my name is Alicia Littletree. I'm the host of Truth to Power. And today we're going to be, as you might have guessed, we're going to have a tribute to Judy Berry. And we're going to, there's a memorial coming up this Saturday, tomorrow in Willits. And I'll announce the specifics on that in a minute or so. But today we're going to be remembering Judy for the whole hour. There's going to be a memorial to celebrate the life of Judy Berry tomorrow, March 10th, in Willits. And Alice DiMaselli is going to play a benefit concert after the memorial, starting at 7 o'clock. So let me give you just the specifics. The memorial is going to start at noon tomorrow at the Willits United Methodist Church, which is at 286 School Street, which is right behind the Grange in downtown Willits. Everyone is welcome to attend the memorial, whether or not you knew Judy, and encouraged to bring and share favorite stories, poems, songs, photos, and mementos that conjure up Judy's spirit. And then at 7 o'clock, Alice DiMaselli will play a concert to benefit Judy, Berry, and Daryl Cherney's lawsuit against the FBI and Oakland Police, which is coming to trial this October. And Alice will be playing with local guitar player Steve Hesch. Actually, he plays a lot more than just guitar. He's like a stringed instrument virtuoso. He's totally mind-blowing. So Alice and Steve together begin at 7 o'clock. We're going to start on time because Rootstock is going to be playing at 10 o'clock at the Shawnee Pub. So it could be a full and really fun day. And it would be really great if people could bring things like candles and flowers and anything that can brighten up the memorial and remind us of Judy. So I've prepared for you a kind of audio celebration of Judy's life. Bunch of different people who knew Judy, some that didn't, and talking about her and a lot of her singing and speaking herself. So I'm going to get this show on the road, and we're going to start with Alice DiMaselli playing a song that she wrote, and I hope you enjoy it.
There is something so still in the core of my soul. That's where you live. Together we're home. There is something so still in the core of my soul. That's where you live. Together we're home. The spirit has passed into something unseen, like the roots of a tree that has fallen, sink deep, deeper and deeper into unknown. Wind through trees, grass and stone, the hearts you've touched our home. And there is something so still in the core of my soul. That's where you live. Together we're home. Oh, when I see you cradled in arms, she sings and rocks you, keeping you warm gently, gently, till you find sleep. Thoughts and visions, memories alive with each breath I take. Something so still in the core of my soul. That's where you live. Together we're home. You cannot say goodbye to love. You cannot say goodbye to love. You cannot say goodbye to love. Cause we all join in the stillness beyond. religion and righteousness merging into one light. Earth and sky, day and night. Blessed be death and life. Blessed be death and life. Blessed be death and life. Blessed be. 'Cause we all join in the stillness beyond religion and foolishness, merging into one light. Earth and sky, day and night. Blessed be death and love. Blessed be death and love.
Good afternoon. My name is Charles Peterson. I'm chairman of the Mendocino County Board of Supervisors. And this is a proclamation of the Mendocino County Board of Supervisors celebrating and commemorating the life and work of Judy Berry. Whereas Judy Berry, a well-respected and much-loved resident of Mendocino County, died on March 2, 1997 at age 47 after being diagnosed with cancer only 6 months previously. And whereas Judy has rightfully earned a place in Mendocino County history because of her unflagging energy and dedication to working for environmental causes and against social injustice, exemplified in her leadership role in timber issues, which joined environmentalists and timber workers in a network of community-based action groups. And whereas Judy, a lifelong supporter of nonviolent action, was herself severely injured in a as yet unsolved car bombing attack, but did not let disability deter her from activism or let bitterness change her commitment to peaceful demonstrations. And whereas Judy was a woman of great intelligence and humor, an example of courage and commitment, whose pursuit of her beliefs with passion and honesty earned the respect of her opponents, and I should add, as well as her supporters. And whereas Judy was a loving and devoted mother to her daughters, Lisa and Jessie, and the beloved daughter of Ruth and Arthur Berry of Baltimore, Maryland, and leaves behind two sisters and a very large extended family. Now, therefore, the Mendocino County Board of Supervisors hereby requests that on today, March 9th, 1997, all citizens honor Judy Berry and her dedication to her community and causes by recognizing the importance of getting involved in the public and private life of their community.
Jello Biafra, the lead singer of the punk band The Dead Kennedys, released a spoken word album called Who Bombed Judy Berry on his label Alternative Tentacles Records.
She was the most powerful public speaker I have ever seen. And beyond that, when I got to know her better, I realized although she was a very hard line in her talk, she was also had a great sense of humor and a great warmth to her. And so it wasn't just a really humorless fundamentalist radical. It was like a nice break from the backbiting and bickering of the political and non-political punk scene, that a lot of the Earth Firsters were a little more human, shall we say. Even Judy was kind of afraid of at first because she was such a heavy, heavy person and all. But Yeah, and so I'd wanted to do something with her for a while because, being a spoken word artist who sort of, because of the topics I talk about, have sort of, gone into political speaking and whether I like it or not, some sort of a leadership role. And here was somebody in a political activist leadership role who was so good at it, you could also consider her one hell of a spoken word artist, and completely free from the Southern California school of self-indulgent poetry of the statue is on the mantelpiece, the records are in the corner, my boyfriend left me and life sucks. The first time I saw her was when I walked into the middle of her talk at Noe Valley Ministry after she was able to get around and walk again, and was just hard-hitting with one bit of frightening information after another about Richard Held and the FBI's COINTELPRO program and linking all these things together with both the bombing and attacks on environmentalists nationwide, which is a story that has barely gotten out. For that matter, a lot of the things that she was talking about and a lot of the history of the Redwood summer actions and all that's come after it and before are still pretty much buried information nationwide. I mean, the best way to fight a protest movement is not to admit it exists, and that's what the mass media did with this, except to claim that Judy and Daryl bombed themselves. And I had never heard of them before that. My sympathies were with Earth First from the very beginning, just because that's kind of where I'm at. And I think the reason Judy was targeted for assassination was because she also, maybe the most important thing she did was, besides, shall we say, feminizing Earth First and getting away from potentially violent tactics, was to try and build bridges with the timber workers instead of we're the environmentalists and you're the rednecks, to hell with all of you. She was trying to find common ground based on her labor organizing background, and apparently was beginning to penetrate when the bomb went off, and penetrated more when she foiled their plans and survived. And also it went both ways. I remember one of her talks was admonishing the eco-activists that some of the best, most knowledgeable forestry experts in the area were the loggers, and that she had learned a lot about what happens to soil when you clear cut right above a protected redwood grove and the silt washes down and kills the redwoods as well as the stream and the salmon and everything else. I mean, this was new to me.
What everybody has been asking me for the last 2 days is, like, how do you organize timber workers? How do you organize loggers? How do you get loggers to talk to Earth Firsters? And the first answer is you have to like loggers. That's the first thing. And I already did because, you know, I, having been a blue-collar worker my whole adult life, the conditions of my life are actually more similar to them than to the privileged environmentalists in the city. So the espresso-sucking pavement dwellers, as we call them. But so being from a rural area myself and being a working-class person myself, I can relate for those reasons. But a lot of it really depends on your attitude. And the thing that happens is people who are more educated or who are from urban areas tend to really look down, especially on rural working people. And actually what I've discovered from a lifetime of being a non-achiever is that intelligence is not equally distributed among the social classes. Dan Quayle is the perfect example of that. But there's a tendency of urban people to look down and consider the timber workers stupid, to talk down to them, to things like that. I've heard a 21-year-old college student say to a 45-year-old logger, "Do you know what biodiversity is?" And, you know, if you do that, that's the end of the conversation. So what I actually do is I just talk to people, that's all. I mean, it's been incredibly easy because there's nobody speaking for the timber workers out there. The wise use movement, the anti-environmentalists, those people are management. In fact, if you actually know them and who they are low-level management. They're fronting for the corporations, but they're not the workers. Nobody's speaking for the workers. The unions have mostly been smashed or corrupted themselves, and the actual interest of the workers is not expressed in the political spectrum in the timber wars. So what I did was, well, one of them is having some respect for them as intelligent human beings. Instead of telling the timber workers what to do, which is the other mistake environmentalists always make, I asked them. And I asked them to tell me about their working conditions and their lives. And the way I would meet them, by the way, is we blockade them. And, you know, here they are, and we're chained to their truck. They're not going anywhere. And, and that actually is really how I started meeting timber workers. And, you know, they're kind of curious about these people who are audacious enough to actually hike into the middle of nowhere in the woods and put their bodies on the line. You know, timber workers tend to be curious, and the cultural difference doesn't really bother them that much. You know, that's another object of curiosity. It's more our, just our attitudes towards them. So as I began to hear their stories, and I didn't even do this consciously, I began to give them a forum. I began to use my access to the locally radical newspapers to, you know, interview them and write about their conditions and what they told me. I used my radio access. I work on KZYX in Mendocino County, one of KBOO's sister stations, and I would, you know, bring the loggers on and stuff like that. So by listening to them, by asking them instead of telling them, I really not only learned a lot of wisdom from them, but also began to build this alliance by advocating for the timber workers' issues in the community. And I didn't, it didn't have to be save the trees. I advocated for workplace issues separately, understanding that it's the same thing, you know, that, that the workplace issues are neither separate from nor subordinate to the forest issues. They're all part of corporate exploitation of the earth and the people.
Jean Lawhorn is a union organizer from Oregon.
I first met Judy through the Industrial Worker, which is the newspaper for the industrial workers of the world. I answered a letter that she wrote in her. She wanted to communicate with mill workers and loggers, and I was working as a mill worker for Roseburg Forest Products, and we were just on strike, and I was becoming more aware of the environmental destruction as days went on, and so I wrote her a letter, and she wrote me a letter back, and which started a wonderful relationship between me and Judy. She became best friends between me and my family, and Judy called me up a few months after that and said that she'd like to have me come on to U of O Law Conference with her at University of Oregon at the Land, Air, and Water Conference on a panel to bridge the gap between workers and environmentalists. And I said, sure, I'd do that. And then while she was putting that together, they told her that they didn't want me on the panel. Well, Judy told them she would boycott that panel if they didn't put me on there. As a result of Judy and I sitting on that panel, we made environmental history because I challenged Judy and other Earth First activists to renounce the tactic of tree spiking at that time. And true to Judy's form, she stood right up and said, I agree with Jean. I hereby denounce the tactic of tree spiking. And I, from that moment on, there was meetings and activists, you know, people met to try to bring this about to where Earth First in Northern California and Southern Oregon would renounce tree spiking and try to bridge the gap between workers and environmentalists. And I kind of feel that Judy's activism in that area led to the bombing, because one thing that scares the hell out of the timber industry and the powers that be is that we should get together to solve our own problems, the ones that they're creating.
I want to say that I really respected the public Judy, the Judy that was out leading the people here, leading the protests, organizing. She was the person that made things happen. And a lot of people in the sawmill logging business respect Judy for what she did and what she accomplished. But what I really want to say is that I really appreciated the private Judy. And the Judy that I really knew was we spent a lot of time meeting in small groups, working on issues that we both felt strongly about. And I really appreciated Judy for who she was in those small private meetings. And she was always upfront and honest. And Judy never once ever misled or lied to me about anything. I mean, when she said Redwood Summer is going to happen and we got to find a way to keep it from being any more violent than it already was, and guess what? We pulled it off. It was a great summer. The changes that we've seen in our communities and in our forests, I think everybody needs to take a lot of credit for. Judy needs a lot of credit for the changes. Everybody out there should take a lot of credit for the changes. And there have been a lot of changes, and I know there are still more things, more changes that need to happen in the forest, but don't sell yourself short. We've all accomplished a lot in the past decade.
That was local Mendocino County mill owner Art Harwood.
Harry, I don't want your diamond ring. All I want is right to live, Harry, and to have a job again. We worked out in your forest, Harry. You made us cut down all your trees. You've taken all we live for, Harry. Now our children starve and freeze. Well, I don't want your hot tub, Harry. I don't want your pleasure yacht. All I want is food for my baby and to see the trees grow back. I know you own the land, eat Harry. The forest is all in your name, but you got no right to steal our future. We're demanding back the land again.
Go to the land.
Well, I don't want your millions, Harry. I don't want your diamond ring. All I want is the right to leave, Harry, and to have a job again.
I met Judy about 7.5 years ago when she showed up at my house with Daryl Cherney. Daryl was looking for a place to live and had advertised in the AVA, and they came over and he didn't want it, but she did. And that was great. So she decided to move in. And she was putting up her sheetrock, and she was doing insulation just all by herself. And then that's when the bombing happened. And after that despicable event, she came back, and with a lot of help, she moved in. And she loved it there. But I don't think Judy ever really, really felt safe again. Anyway, she settled in and she made this little cabin into a very beautiful place. And we never needed a lease because, even though we tried, she was so fair and honest and trustworthy, we didn't need one. So as long as I'm talking superlatives, you know, Judy had a clarity of vision. She was brilliant. She was articulate. She was honest. She was determined. She was strong, maybe too strong sometimes, I think. She was fearless, maybe sometimes too fearless. And she was funny. She was the funniest person I know. She was wickedly funny. And sometimes I wondered what she was saying about me when I wasn't there. But it didn't matter, really, because I loved her so much, and I knew she loved me, and so it was okay. So briefly, the obvious. I really miss her, as I know many of you do, and I really thank her, like I know you thank her. My life was enriched and changed by her, as I'm sure many of yours were. And now it's time to give back. What I think she would want the most for us to do is, besides saving headwaters and this bleeding planet, is to not forget that she almost died 7 years ago, and whoever it was that was responsible is still out there. And nobody tried to find out. The FBI did not do anything except to accuse her, investigate her friends, and investigate other people in the environmental movement. She spent a staggering amount of time and energy working on her FBI lawsuit right up until the very end. So I think we can't forget, we have to keep asking what malevolent force or forces out there tried to kill her. And whoever they are, they're still there, and they're ready to stand up and do it again to anybody else who stands up to them. So don't forget, and don't let them get away with it. And remember that the best revenge really is having a good time, and she always had a good time, she always had fun, she was always laughing, she was always feeling the joy, and I can just see her smile right now, and if you close your eyes, you can probably see her smile too.
This is KZYXNZ. I'm Alicia Littletree, and you're listening to Truth to Power, and today we're remembering Judy Berry.
What we found is the FBI, after the bombing, they didn't do anything until the Alameda County refused to press charges against me and Daryl. And then they decided to put on this supposed investigation. And they sent all these FBI agents up here under the pretense of investigating the bombing. But what we charge in the lawsuit is that instead of investigating the bombing, they investigated Earth First, and that they avoided all leads that could have reasonably helped solve the case. And instead, they gathered information on as many activists as they could. So we questioned all of the local cops that we could who had talked to the FBI. And we asked them about, well, here's this little form where the FBI writes about their interview with you. Is this true? And what we found is that both the Humboldt County and the Mendocino County cops, those who will talk, some can't remember anything. Sergeant Satterwhite of the Mendocino Sheriffs is an example of somebody who couldn't remember a thing. I mean, it's just amazing what a memory this guy. But those who had any memory at all said, that's not what I said. Those are not accurate descriptions of my conversation with the FBI. And some of these were very significant. So like in Humboldt County, we talked to three of the sheriffs. We talked to Sheriff Rod Lester, Gary Philp, and Gary Holder. And in those things, one of the things that they said in the interview with them, the FBI says, attributing to them, says that these Humboldt County sheriffs had said that individuals suspected of being a core group capable of engaging in violent activity include the following: Mickey Doulas, Lincoln Pierce, Francine Allen, Bill DeVell, Greg King, Larry Evans, Lisa Henry, that's Liz's daughter, and Daryl Turney. Notice I'm not even on the list. Anyway, so we said, did you give that list? And they said, well, we did give that list of names, but we didn't say that those were people capable of violence. That's not the question they asked us. The question the FBI asked us is, who is the core group that is organizing Redwood Summer? Well, that's very interesting because, first of all, they're falsifying their documents to make it look like we're violent when that was not the question. And the Humboldt County Sheriff said, these people are very nonviolent. We would never call them violent. So, first of all, they're trying to make us look violent. Secondly, they have no right under the Attorney General guidelines to investigate Redwood Summer. They only have a right to investigate the bombing. So it's kind of a double whammy there. They also, there's others like that. They said in the same document, they say Philp and Lester say that there's three different Earth First groups and they're all fighting with each other and pulling coups on each other. And they said, no. They asked us who are the different groups organizing Redwood Summer, not who's fighting with each other. And these people got along all too well. We didn't say any of that stuff. They also had a story about Mickey Doulas, who was one of the organizers back then, saying that she was crying because I was running things from my wheelchair, and Gary Holder testified emphatically that he never said anything of the kind. But now let's move down to Mendocino. We questioned Sergeant Dan Walker of the Ukiah Police, and Walker is credited by the FBI. It says, Walker stated, this is supposedly the FBI's, you know, interview with him about the bombing case. It says, Walker stated that, for information, David Colfax is a school board member and Norm Duvall is a county supervisor in Fort Bragg. Alexander Coburn writes for the Anderson Valley Advertiser. So we said to Sergeant Dan Walker, did you say that? And he said, absolutely not. He said, I don't even know this guy Alexander Cockburn, and I don't know David Colfax. The only one of those three people who I even know is Norm Duvall. So I very definitely, it's not just that I don't remember saying that. I would not have said that because I don't know those people. The same thing happened with Chief Foster former Chief Foster from the Willits Police. It says in the document that he was told, Chief Foster was then asked if he knew Anna Marie Stenberg, who operated a child daycare center in Fort Bragg. Chief Foster acknowledged knowing Anna Marie Stenberg, stating that she is a very intelligent and articulate individual who is a close friend of David Cherney's and who likes media attention. And Bob Foster said he never said that. He said, I don't know Anna Marie and I don't know Daryl Cherney. I would not have had that information to give to the FBI.
That was Judy trying to cram in a bombing case update on her radio show, Punchin' Judy.
Dennis Cunningham is the attorney who worked with Judy on the FBI lawsuit.
The case is going to keep right on going. It's certainly going to be a very different job without Judy to do the main work. The brains she brought to it and the subtlety and the intellect that she brought to understanding all the facts, all the evidence, all the information that we were able to get about what happened right after they were bombed and about what had happened, what had been going on before they were bombed and about what went on since and keeps on going in the way of a cover-up of what the police and the FBI did in response to the bombing. Everybody knows we're suing them for false arrest. We're suing them for interfering with what Earth First was doing, for disrupting and being out to neutralize in the old COINTELPRO word about what Earth First was about. What people lose track of, I think, and it's important to remember when you think about Judy's case, is it's a case where we're prosecuting these law enforcement people also for letting the murderers go free. In fact, and these were murderers, this is a woman who was murdered, only it didn't work. She didn't die, even though she was intended to be killed. In jumping on her and Daryl and accusing them of carrying that bomb, there was a very strict purpose that the government have, our government, your tax dollars in action, which was, as I just said, to smear Earth First and to smear Judy and to shut her up, just like the bombers wanted to shut her up. But what they did also was let who did that go. They never lifted a finger to try to find out who tried to kill Judy. And they haven't still. So that's part of what we're trying to expose. The case that I've been trying to work on and others and that Judy was working on and that, as several people have told you, she kept working on until the day of her death. She kept working on when there was no more work really left in her and when she had stopped doing pretty much anything else. She kept working on this case and talking about the case and kind of kicking the rest of our butts to get our work done on the case. The reason that I think she saw that, or she felt that she wanted to do the case above all and she wanted to keep plugging on the case when there wasn't much else left for her to do, that she died telling us, you know, to keep pushing the case, was because, you know, she was about a political outlook and she was involved in a political case. A case about the most fundamental kind of thing that could go on in a society. We're blessed and gifted and also profiting illicitly from having a society where the contradiction between the police and the people is not nearly so strong as it is in most places right on the whole planet. But it still is strong, it still is real, and there still is a police function in all societies that are run hierarchically about keeping the dissenters down and keeping them quiet by one means or another. And it doesn't have to be, you know, wholesale slaughter and torture like so many of the places that are still on the earth that are sponsored by our government. It can be much subtler means. It can still be very real and very powerful. So she was about trying to keep that in front of us, about that reality that we're dealing with, that you can't look around and say, well, I'm working on this or I'm working on that, and so this doesn't concern me what the cops do or what the government does to people who are trying to say the government ought to operate in a different way. That's why the case is important, because it exposes the government for engaging in repression, for trying to stop people and disrupt their work when they speak out about change. You know that was what she was about. She saw the environment, the concern of the environment, bringing people together the same way. Even though it's going to be really a lot harder than you could than I could describe and a lot more complex without her there, there's no question that it still goes on. And the main work of gathering the evidence that that will bring those cops and those FBI agents to justice for the false arrest and for all the disruption that they did is pretty much done. And she did the major portion of it. She's the one that read it all, that pulled it all together, that kicked our butts to make us work on it and push it forward. And we're going to keep right on with it. Anybody who knows what the sense of being connected to some kind of project that she was part of, you know how solid you felt that was because you knew she was there. And you knew she wasn't going to let stuff slide, and she wasn't going to get okey-doked onto the side, and she wasn't going to get mixed up in a lot of fooling around. She was right for the main stuff. So all we got, we're all left with that was, she was very exasperating in that way, wasn't she? People who knew her, you know, she could really get under your skin. You look at a lot of these pictures that are here, you see her grinning. She just needled somebody real good there, you know. She just really brought it out there, you know. That was her. Now she's really exasperated all of us and exasperated us as a group by leaving us here with ourselves, you know, without her, only with our work and the same work that got to go on, you know, and needs that same energy. Everybody has to replace it.
Well, I was driving out of Oakland on a tour for Redwood Summer when a bomb went off inside my car. It was a major bummer. They blamed me for the bomb that almost took my life. But there's one last thing that they did, one last twist of the knife. The FBI stole my fiddle.
They stole my fiddle.
The FBI stole my fiddle.
The FBI stole my fiddle.
The FBI stole my fiddle. Next day in the papers, although it made no sense, was a picture of my fiddle and they called it evidence. They took away my Birkenstocks, they took away my car. But when they took my fiddle, well, you know they went too far. The FBI stole my fiddle.
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 William Sessions stole my fiddle. And I want my strings was fuses, my bow it was the light, and down inside my fiddle hole I stashed my dynamite. So when I stroke my fuse string with my fiddle bow, you better run for cover, cause this fiddle might just blow. The FBI stole my fiddle.
The FBI stole my fiddle.
The FBI stole my fiddle. Agent Richard Held is the man behind the show. He helped frame Leonard Peltier and jail Geronimo. He falsified the evidence, life sentences, no bail. It's time to get them freed and let's put Richard Held in jail. The FBI stole my fiddle.
Richard Held stole my fiddle.
About our DNA. DNA, descendants and ancestors. We are the descendants, we are the ancestors. DNA. Our DNA, our blood, our flesh, and our bone is made up of the metals and the minerals and the liquids of the earth. We are the earth. We truly, literally, and figuratively are the earth. Any relationship that we will ever have in this world to real power, not energy systems and other artificial means of authority, but any relationship we will ever have to real power is in our relationship to the earth. So when we look at what Judy was doing and what Earth First does, they were establishing their connection with the basic reality that we must take care of the earth. Our power comes from the earth. Power, and it's very important that we understand who we are in relationship to power, because we have been tricked and lied to, in almost in a way one would say brainwashed, into looking at authority as power. And it's very important that we make this distinction, because we need to have something to pass to the next generations. Authority is not power. Authority is authority. And all authority is usually based upon aggression or implied aggression or active aggression. Authority is authority. Power is something else. Power is what we come from. It is a natural part. It's a part of a natural order of the universe that we are truly connected to. Power. Authority is something that man creates. So this is where someone like Judy becomes a threat, because she understands that she has power, and she understands the reality of responsibility that goes with power. She understands that. We can't communicate with her now the way that we used to, but we can communicate with her. That's life. That's spirit.
Native American poet John Trudell.
Coyote Valley Band of Pomo Indians honors you as an earth warrior, commends your contribution to making this world a safer place in which to live, and recognizes you as a sister in spirit to Native American resistance. Thank you for your heart, your courage, and your solidarity. Priscilla Hunter, chairperson of the Coyote Valley Band of Pomo Indians.
Okay, welcome to the Punch and Judy Show. This is your host, Judy Berry. Well, last week, of course, I didn't show up at my show, and I dropped the devastating news on you all, at least devastating to me, that I've learned that I have cancer. And I asked people not to call me because I was overwhelmed, and I certainly was. I guess I still am. And I appreciate the people who didn't call, and I appreciate the people who wrote me letters and all the sentiments that people have been sending my way. I felt humiliated by the sensationalism, especially. I felt like I needed to tell you all who listen to this show. I needed to tell my own community. I needed to tell the people who listen to KMUD. But when the Press Democrat picked it up and put it on the front page on a banner headline so that it would show in the newsstand so they could sell more newspapers, I found that really humiliating, and it made it a lot harder for me to get out in the public and talk to people and stuff like that. But, you know, I've had enough pathos in my life, and I've had enough people feeling sorry for me, and, you know, I definitely don't feel normal. There's no question about that. I'm very tired. I don't have the energy that I usually have. And more things hurt than usually hurt. But,
you know, I'm still able to function. So what I think I want to do is to keep functioning as much as I can and as long as I can. And I've dropped out of a lot of the things that I normally do. I've dropped out of the Headwaters organizing. That wasn't an easy thing to do, but, you know, the trees wouldn't let me go last summer, but this fall the trees let me go. And, of course, it's very devastating to get this kind of news. But as hard as it is for me to deal with it, and it is definitely hard, I'm not trying to minimize it, it's probably less hard for me than it is for a lot of other people because I've already dealt with death. I dealt with that in 1990, and I think I've made my peace with it. I don't have any death wishes, that's for sure, and I certainly want to raise my children, and I certainly want to stay in this world and keep interacting in this world. But you know, this isn't even the worst thing that's ever happened to me. If the FBI pulled up and arrested me for having cancer, then it might be the worst thing that's ever happened to me. So I guess I've been through enough hell that a little more is not going to keep me completely out of the picture. And what I want to do is just keep working on things and keep being in the world and keep dealing with issues as they come up and not just dwell on this. 40 years ago, 1 in 20 women got breast cancer, and today that rate is 1 in 8, and in the Bay Area it's 1 in 7. And I know I never knew anybody that had cancer, and I'm sure everybody that's listening to this show knows lots and lots of people who do. So I think the question of whether or not there are environmental causes as to whether this world is just becoming too toxic to live in is certainly something that we need to think about.
Naomi Steinberg is one of the Redwood Rabbis.
Shalom Aleichem. I had the great privilege of meeting Judy Berry in 1988 when she came to my house to help me work on a newsletter for organizing PL pensioners for a lawsuit to protect their pension rights, which had been ripped off in the Maxam takeover. Judy was wonderful. Judy was inspiration, and right there in 1988, she made that firm bond between the need to protect and restore the forest and respect the needs of the timberworking community. She had a tremendous vision and dedication to the people of that valley. I live in Carlotta, right next to Headwaters Forest, and I was always deeply moved by Judy's sensitivity to the needs of the working families. Judy had a vision of empowerment. She clung to it through a decade of distress. Empowerment for the working people, empowerment for Native people, empowerment for disabled people, empowerment for women, especially within the Earth First movement. An extraordinary depth and tenacity of vision and excitement. She could inspire us all to feel that we too could be empowered. Judy came to me as a teacher. She taught me some of the nuts and bolts of organizing and continued to inspire me. I think she was a teacher for many of us. She taught us humor. She taught us to nudge. She taught us to push beyond all reasonable limits. She taught us to laugh in the face of danger. She taught us stunning bravery. She called me 2 weeks before she died. She said, "Naomi, I am so proud of this movement." Here she was with every reason to be a celebrity. She didn't speak of herself. She spoke of this movement of bringing people together. Extraordinary selflessness, extraordinary humanity. Many people have said that in Judy's memory, we have to work harder and harder. I want to tell you that also in Judy's memory, we have to enjoy. Judy enjoyed life. In her memory, yes, more organizing, more meetings, more direct actions, more campaigns, more chaining us to ourselves to anything that will hold us, yes, but also in her memory, more fiddle music, more apple pies, more strawberry plants, More love. More love. More time with our children. More time with our community. More time with our loved ones. To honor Judy, more enjoyment. More love.
Poet and rabble-rouser Mary Corte.
I want to thank my logger neighbor for the title of this poem. And I know that it mentions John Muir, who was a crotchety old sexist. And I just want to say that I think Judy is either making him take the long way around while she brings him up to date, or else, after all, he understands now. John Muir welcomes Judy Barry into heaven. They who carried her to the boat wave and wave and wave, as wave after wave of spring tide washes the hands of their grief, and every drum rolls, and all the folks who know the songs turn out to for her. And oh my, thunder rolls, and every brass band that ever was turns out, because John Muir doesn't pilot the boat for just anybody. And wave after wave on the gleaming shore brings her to the shore and to gleaming spring tides, gathered close and gathered close and gathered close. Goodbye, Judy. Goodbye. We love you. Goodbye. Goodbye. Ooh! 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 We love you, Judy. Godspeed.
Up on stage for the grand finale.
This is it.
Everybody come on up here. We know you know this song.
This song about sums it up, I think.
All right. It's All our right. prayer for the... Yay. And where's Billy Howe? Because he taught us this song. He better come up here.
It's G.
White man. White man. G. G. They're all in G.
Over this land. I'm just a poor wayfaring stranger, a traveling through this world of woe, and there's no thing.
All right, well, that was a tribute to Judy Berry. Judy died March 2nd, 1997. We're going to be gathering in Willits tomorrow, Saturday, March 10th, to remember Judy's life and her work, reflect on the 4 years without her, and just be together. And at 7 o'clock, there will be a benefit concert with Alice DiMicelli, whose voice you're hearing in the background. Beautiful voice. Alice will be playing with Steve Hesch, 7 o'clock. The memorial starts at noon. Both events take place at the Willits United Methodist Church in downtown Willits, across from the Willits Grange. If you want more information, you can call 468-1660. I want to say special thanks to Yanahe Hooper, who did a lot of the recording of the voices that you just heard, both at the memorial for Judy right after she died on March 9th, 1997, and that last White Man's World song was at a 1993 event for the Albion slap suit, people who'd been sued. So I'm going to bring Alice's voice back up. My name is Alicia Littletree. This has been Truth to Power, which has been brought to you by the Fry Vineyards and Winery in Redwood Valley. Stay tuned next for Jim Hightower and then Soul Spectrum with Pilar Duran, and I'll be back with you in 2 weeks. Thanks so much for listening.
No more to roam. I'm just a going over the Jordan. I'm just a just a go, I'm just going home. I'm just a go. I'm just a going home.